In today's daf is daf yud. We're going to start at the bottom of Tet Amud Bet. Hahushtara. Hahushtara dava katev be shichni yeterata. If there's a document that has 6 extra years, we saw this yesterday, that there was a bit of a discrepancy between when we start counting the Greek rule. So if it says, let's say today's date is 2018, and it said 2024, so Savar Rabbanan Kamei de Rebbe Lememar, the rabbis thought to say, Hayshtara Meucharhu. Ne'ach ve'adamat hezimne ve'lo tarif. I just want to check. Is that, it's not Rebbe, is it? That doesn't make sense.
Rabba.
Rabba. Oh, right. That makes sense. Rabba. It doesn't make sense. It would be Rebbe. It's not Tanim. Rabba with an aleph? Or a hey? Okay. Anyway. The rabbi said in front of... what? With an aleph? Rabba. Okay. The rabbi said in front of Rabba to say that what? That we should call this a shtar mu'char. What's a shtar mu'char? It's a, like a post-dated check. Right, so you have a post-dated check. If someone gave you a check now for 2024, so you wouldn't be able to cash it until 2024. So if someone has a, what's the relevance here? It's not a check. It's a shtar that says, we took out a loan in 2024. And so the rabbis wanted to say, this is a shtar mu'uchar, and therefore, ne'ak ve'ademate zimne ve'lo tarif. What's the whole relevance? First of all, if I have a loan that says I lent you money in 2024, and I want to collect it, I'm allowed to collect it now, even though the date is post-dated. It's not like a post-dated check. I can collect it. But what I can't do is, what's the reason for post-dating it? It's because you and I came to an agreement. What happens when we take out a check and a loan and we write a shtar? I can collect from anybody that you sold property to from the date of the shtar, really the date of the loan, until whenever I go to collect it. So I go to collect it. I know that you have property, so I lend you the money because I know you have property. You say, well, I'll sell the property, and then I won't have to pay back the loan because I won't have any assets. So I'm allowed to do what? We've learned this many times. It's called litrof milekuchot. If you sold property after the time of the loan, because I checked into it, I knew you had land, you then sold the land, I can go take it from whoever you sold it to. But if we post-date the shtar, then when I go to bring this shtar to court and say I want to get the land that you sold in 2018 or 2019 or 2020, I can't collect from that because my shtar only says 2024. So the rabbis assume that if today we wrote a shtar and we wrote 2024, that what was the meaning? The meaning was that we made an arrangement that I agreed to forfeit my right to collect from anyone who you sold property to between 2018 and 2024. So that's what they thought. They thought it was a shtar mu'uchar, and what did they say? Ne'akve, we'll hold it back. In other words, we'll hold back this person from collecting the malve adimat yezim ne'velo tarif until the time comes, right, to the date of the loan, and we won't let him take property from people that land was sold to between 2018 and 2024. So Amar Rav Nachman, said, what are you talking about? Hai safra dafkana katve. V'hanach shichnin de malchu be'elam de anan lo chashvinan lehu hu kachashiv le ubezim ne katve. You misunderstood. Remember, they dated all their documents back to the Greeks. The Greek rule, there was a debate about these 6 years where the Greeks ruled first in Elam. So he's saying there were these 6 years before when they ruled in Elam and they didn't yet rule in the entire world. So when they said 2024, they really meant 2018 according to our count. They just counted. They started from 6 years later. 6 years earlier. So wait, does that make sense? Then they should be, if they started 6 years earlier.
It should be the opposite.
So why is that? So how did that work out? Right, we count later, and he starts earlier.
If so, when the scribe writes 506, for example, he actually
right. That's what it is. It's
500.
Right. He means 2024 means 2024 years after the Greeks started ruling, which was 6 years earlier, which really comes out to 2018. Right. That's how that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that works out. So now. Ditanya, and here we're going to see a source for this. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shesh Shanim Malchu Be'elam, V'achar Kach Pasha Malchutam B'kol Ha'olam Kulav. Okay, so first they ruled in Elam only, and then they ruled in the whole world. So the question is, Where do you start the count from? When they started ruling in Elam, or when they started ruling in the whole world? And therefore, if we're off by 6 years, we're going to assume that that's the issue. When you see this date that's off by 6 years, how do you know that they're counting from the time of the Greeks? And then you could say, well, they really meant the Greeks 6 years earlier, and that really matches our date. Okay, we're going to learn now that Yetziat Mitzrayim happened exactly 1,000 years before the Greeks started ruling, not in Elam, but the later date. Okay, so he's saying, why are you assuming that they're going by the Machuyavan? Maybe they're counting Yetziat Mitzrayim. Now, you're going to be off by 1,000 years if you do that, but like we saw yesterday, Vishavke la'afa kama, v'nafte afa batra. In other words, they sometimes, okay, this goes on all the time, when we date documents, we write sometimes just 17 or 18, now we're in 18, we write 18, we wouldn't write 2018, because everyone knows it's obvious what thousand, you know, even well, 100 years we're in.
Date even better example, because right. It has to have a hay in front of it.
Exactly.
The hay, nobody uses it.
Right, exactly. The hay also nobody uses, right? So the same thing. So it's very likely that they cut off the 1,000, not to Alpha Batra, okay? And therefore, right, they cut off that last 1,000. And if that's the case, that they're counting Yetziat Mitzrayim, well, then you can't give that answer that there's this six-year difference between Elam, because that's the Greeks. That's not Yetziat Mitzrayim, in which case, we're going to say again, it's a Shtar Me'uchar. Okay, so they're suggesting that maybe they're counting from Yetziat Mitzrayim, in which case, V'hai Me'uchar Hu. Because obviously, there's big ramifications here for this loan, whether we say it's a Shtar Me'uchar or not. Can he take land or can he not? Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says, that's not a question, because Bagola Ein monim ela l'machayif anim bilvad. Okay, he says, that's not a question, because in the Galut, they always count to machay yivanim. So now, they say, who suffered d'chuya kamad chela? He thought that, I assume this is Rava, because it's a back and forth. Rava thought that he was just pushing him off, and he gave that as an excuse. And he was trying to say, stop saying it's a shtar mukhar, this was clearly the Greeks, and clearly this, because in the Galut, they always do it. And he thought that he was just stop saying it. Okay, he didn't really mean it. Nafek dak ve'eshkach, but he went and he looked into it. Okay, instead of just assuming that the guy was pushing him off and just giving, Rav Nachman was just giving him some random answer, he said, well, let me look into it. That's what he means. Nafek yatsa dak, who's mihu medakdek ve'eshkach, and he found, in fact, to be true, to Tanya, that there's a braita that supports that. Bagola emonin ela lamachay fanim bovad. Okay, and therefore he realized Rav Nachman was really relying on a braita, and he had a good basis. It's interesting that he uses this braita to prove, because this might not be the best. Usually we always say the braita knows best, right? That if you have an earlier source, they always know better. In this case, we're talking about a mitziut type of thing. We're talking about a shtar that comes in front of them in the fourth generation Amoraim, or third to fourth generation Amoraim. The braita is from the Tanaim time period. The braita were written generally even in Eretz Yisrael, and they're talking about what they do in the Galut. And here they're living in the Galut, and who knows, right? In other words, it's very possible that that type of thing changed between then and now. But Rav Nachman offers this as proof, and it stays despite that. Okay, Amar Ravina. Matnitin nami daika. We can also infer this from the Mishnah. You can see that they weren't so clear-cut, so they keep bringing more proofs and more proofs. Ditnan, okay, not in our Mishnah, but in the Mishnah. Ditnan, a Masechet Rosh Hashanah, if you remember, it says, Be'echad b'nisan Rosh Hashanah le'melachim ve'lirgalim. Okay, the first of Nisan is the first day of the year for the count of the kings, when you count the king's reign, and for the holidays, right? The holidays start with Nisan in terms of in the Torah, right? It says what the dates are, etc., right? It starts from the first month is Nisan. Vamrinan le'melachim l'may hilchatan. They say, well, what's the relevance of knowing whether Rosh Hashanah, right, Rosh Chodesh, Echad b'Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah le'melachim. Amrav Chisda l'shtarot. He says it's for the purposes of shtarot. Okay, they start their year in Echad b'Nisan. Utnan also says in the Mishnah, Be'echad b'Tishrei Rosh Hashanah l'shanim u'lishmitim. Vamrinan l'shanim l'may hilchatan. So they say, what's the relevance of shanim? Amar Rav Chisda l'shtaro. So Rav Chisda says here, when it talks about the first of Tishrei, is Rosh Hashanah l'shanim, he says, well, what's the relevance? So Rav Chisda again answers for shtaro. Well, now we have a big problem, because he said, shtaro start on the first of Nisan, and shtaro start on the first of Tishrei. Kashya shtaro hadade. So we have a contradiction between shtaro and shtaro, and it's the same Rav Chisda who says both. U'meshaninan, kan l'machei Yisrael, kan l'machei ovdei kochavim. Okay, when we count Lamache Yisrael, we start in Chab Nisan, and when we count Lamache Avdei Kochavim, we start in Chab B'Tishrei. Okay, Lamache Avdei Kochavim, sorry, it says it explicitly, Mitishrei Meninan, Lamache Yisrael, Minisan Meninan. Okay, what does this have to do with our proof? Va'anan, remember what we're trying to prove, that we're talking about the years of the Greek rule and not the years from Yitziat Mitzrayim. Va'anan hashta Mitishrei Meninan. And here we count from Tishrei. We do our count in Ishtara from Tishrei. Tishrei is considered the first month. So if Tishrei is considered the first month, then it must be that we're counting Lamachay Yisrael and not Yitzia Mitzrayim. If we're counting from Yitzia Mitzrayim, we'd be counting from Nisan. And therefore, it's clear that that star isn't dated from Yitzia Mitzrayim minus the 1,000 years, right? So therefore, it must be it's the Greeks. Once it's the Greeks, right? Elalav shmamina lamachayiv animaninan shmamina. Once it's the Greeks, we could say it's not a shtar me'uchar because we can switch the 6 years. We could say, oh, it's a 6 year difference, and really they counted from a different count, and we can assume that really it was dated this year and not a shtar me'uchar. Okay, moving back to the Mishnah. If you remember the Mishnah, okay, who remembers where we started? We were listing the holidays of the non-Jews. So we went through the first few, and now we have a bunch of different things which sort of seem to overlap, and we're going to have to try to figure out what's the difference between them. So we had Yom Ginusia Shel Malchehem. So the Gemara says, "Mai v'Yom Ginusia Shel Malchehem." What is this day that we're talking about? Amar Rav Yehuda, Yom Shemamidim Bo Avdei Kochavim at Malkam. Okay, it's the day that they coronate their king. V'hatanya, but doesn't it say in a Braita, Yom Ginusia vi Yom Shemamidim Bo at Malkam? There's a Braita that says the Yom Ginusia and the day that they appoint their king, so it seems to contradict. I'm sorry, not contradict. It contradicts our interpretation of the Mishnah because it sounds like they're two different things. Lo kasha, hadidei hadibarei. It's not a contradiction because one is the king himself and one is when the son becomes king during the time of the other king. Okay, when they appoint the son to be the king, while the father's still alive, and as if the father's not alive, then it's just the coronation of the king. But when the father's still alive and they appoint the son in his place, then that's called the right, so which do they call which? That's the Yom Shemamidim Bo at Malkam. Okay? So then they say, Umi Mukme Malka Bar Malka, but do they really, there is no dynastic rule here, okay? And the non-Jews, now again, you could say, again, difference between the time of the Mishnah and the time of the Gemara. Maybe in the time of the Mishnah, there was a dynastic rule, and here there isn't. Anyway, they're going to say, is there such a thing? I mean, in general, you have to question the whole history of this account, and in fact, we're going to get into a whole, so to speak, historical story, okay, that whether, again, whether you view this as history or not, anyway, we'll talk about it later. But, so they say it's not dynastic, right? They're usually here referring to the Roman rule. Okay, it's not a dynastic rule. V'hatane Rav Yosef. Okay, how do we know this? Because Rav Yosef says, Hine katone taticha bagoyim. What do we learn from this pasuk? That this is a pasuk in Ovadiah, okay, which talks about, Ovadiah is all about, right, Esav. And Esav is Edom, and Edom is Rome. Okay, that's the association, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. Maybe I'll even start it now, which is that I was looking at this book. It's called Shnei Goyim Bebitnech, okay, about Yaakov and Esav. And it's written by Yisrael Yaakov Yuval, a professor in Hebrew U. And he talks about that Rabbi Akiva was really the first one to be Mechadesh, that Edom is Esav. Okay, and he started this whole thing that Edom is Esav, and that, sorry, Esav is Edom, yes, we knew, but that Edom is Rome, okay? That Edom is associated with the Romans, and I have to remember exactly, was it even that Edom is, that Esav is Edom? Anyway, he has a whole interesting theory about, he talks about the Roman rule and how also it changed over time, that in the 2nd century and beginning of the 3rd century, there were very good relations between the Romans. Obviously in the Khorban, right, in 70, there were very bad relations. Then, once the Romans took over, there were very good relations. That's when the Cardo was built, and there were a lot of positive things going on between. I mean,
You don't see.
Yes,
invited them.
Okay. Today's daf is all about Yudanasi. Yeah, we're going to see all sorts of stories. Okay. Yeah.
They invited them in, you know, when the Maccabim were when the Hashmonai family was disintegrating and falling. Mm-hmm. But the Jews invited the Romans in to help deal with them.
Right.
That's how they got there.
Exactly. So anyway, there's very good relations with them later, okay? But we're talking way past Hashmonaim. We're talking...
When the ruling family, the dynasty, was...
After the Chorban?
No.
Right. I'm saying that we're talking after the Chorban. Okay, much later, right? And it's, yes, earlier, fine, but then there's the destruction, bad relationship. Then relationships get good until, the middle of the 3rd century. Okay, when they declare Christianity as the, right, when Constantine declares it, right, that's 4th century. So when they declare Christianity as the main religion, and then what he quotes, which is really interesting, again, it's kind of a pre to what we're going to get into in the doc, but... What he claims is that he quotes from Paul, and that he basically, what Paul writes in his writings is that the Christians are Yaakov now, and the Jews are Esav. And that's when the Jews take that whole image and flip it and say, no, the Christians are Esav. And his claim, which is very interesting, I don't know enough about it, but he claims that it's because the Christians use the image of Yaakov and Esav and claim that now we're the rejected ones and they're the chosen ones, that we used it in the reverse and called them Esav, okay? And that we attributed that whole thing to them based on that whole... And that was, again, earlier. But then there end up being good relations and then it goes bad again, and that's when there's a lot of this imagery. So anyway, right now they say, okay, here we learn from here that... the pasuk in Ovadia that talks about Esav is hinei katonet haticha baruyim bazoi atam od. So again, they assume this is a reference to the Romans, and they say, what do we learn? Katonet haticha, that they don't have a dynastic rule. Emoshiv melech ben melech, and now it's a totally side thing. Bazoi atam od shein lam lo ktav lo lashon. Right, they use Latin, which isn't their own language, and they don't have their own script. Okay, they're again, these are negative things about Rome. Ella, so therefore, where were we getting to? You can't say it's the coronation of the son in the time of the father, because the son didn't generally become king in the time of the father. There wasn't dynastic rule. Ella, ma yom ginusia, yom haleda. So yom ginusia must have been the birthday of the king. Vahatanya, but wait, that doesn't work, because it says also in a brighter, yom ginusia vi yom haleda. There's another brighter that says, right, the yom ginusia and the day of the birth. So what do they answer? Lo kasha hadide hadibere. Okay, one is his birthday, and one is the birthday of the son. But then they say, Vahatanya, but there's another brighter. You can see there were tons of brighter about this. Maybe they weren't all familiar anyway with all the holidays of the non-Jews. Maybe there's a possibility like that. Anyway, there's another brighter that says, Yom Ginusya Shelo Vi Yom Ginusya Shel Beno. So you can't say they celebrated the king's birthday and the son of the king's birthday. Okay, that doesn't make any sense. That was called the Yom HaLeida, was the son's birthday, because we already have the Yom Ginusya Shelo and Yom Ginusya Shel Beno Vi Yom HaLeida Shelo Vi Yom HaLeida Shel Beno. Okay, they already list those as separate things, so Yom Ginusya can't be Yom HaLeida. Ela Ma Yom Ginusya Yom Shemamidim Bo Malkam. So we go back to our original. The Yom Ginusya must be the day they coronate the king. Velo Kasha Hadide Hadibere. Okay, but wait, we said this was problematic, right? We now said, yes, it's the day they coronated him, and the other one is the day they coronated the son in the time of the king. Didn't we just say, right? And if you want to say, well, there is no dynastic rule, what are the answer? Al yedei she'ela mukme. Okay, here we're going to get into now Rebbe in a minute, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasih. By she'ela, by asking, requesting... Sometimes they were allowed to request that their son be king, and sometimes they were granted the request. So once in a while, it did happen that it was dynastic. Kigon Asverus ben Antoninus. Okay, like Asverus, the son of Antoninus. Dimalach, okay, that he was king. So now they say, so Yom Ginusya is the king. Yom Shemamidim Bo Melech is the son in the time of the father, which happened once in a while. Okay, it wasn't common, but it did happen because they could ask permission. How do we know he asked permission? And from here, we're going to get into a whole slew of stories of interactions between Rabbi Yehuda HaNasih and Antoninus. And here's where we talk about where it's clear they had good relations. I think the story might be taking it a little farther than you'll see. These stories are a bit unrealistic, okay? But what they want to highlight, and maybe they're doing it in an extreme form, to highlight how good the relationships were between the Jews and the and the Romans at that time period of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who lived around 200. So Amar Antoninus LeRabbi, Beina Diyimloch Asveris Berei Tachotai. I want my son Antoninus to be king underneath me. He says to Rabbi. And I also want it Abit Veria Kalanya. I want Tveria to be a city free of taxes. Tveria was known to be a city full of Talmidei Chachamim, and Talmidei Chachamim were generally patur from taxes. So he says, I want to make the entire city, just declare it a city free of taxes. V'emalehu chada, and if I go to the Romans and I say, right, and he was a Roman officer, but he wanted to go to the higher ups, and he says, if I ask them for permission, so chada avde, betray lo avde. They're only going to do one. They're not going to grant me two requests. So what should I do? So Rebbe gives him advice. Okay, we're going to see all along that Antoninus goes to Rebbe for advice. Aite gavra, he takes a person, arkaveh chavra, and he puts him on top of the shoulders of his friend. V'yad le'yona le'ilai, and he gives the one standing on the, right, sitting on the shoulders of the other one, the high one, the upper one, he gives them a yona biyade. Okay, he gives them a dove to hold in his hands. V'amale le'tata, and he tells the one below, imar le'ela de'mifrach min yade yona. He says to the one underneath, tell the guy on top of you to let the bird go free. Amar shmamina hachika amrali. So what does Antoninus understand from this? He says, this is the image. This is what he's telling me. Ad baminayu das verus bereim loch tachotai. Go ask permission from the Romans that Asverus will rule under you. You can see also the under you, right? The ones on top of the other, right? He'll rule under you. In other words, you're underneath Asverus. Asverus' son is like on his shoulders. And what happened? He taught Asverus to let the bird go free. So what's it an image for? Ve'emale l'Asverus, and then tell Asverus to tavit tveria kalanya. And you'll ask one request and he'll ask another request. It's a very nice image. It's also, you don't always have to do everything yourself. You can empower someone else to do what you want to get done. Amarle, okay, so that was the first story. Now another story. Amarle, mitzarin le chashuve Rome. The important people of Rome are giving me a lot of trouble. So what should you do? Ma'ayale, here Rabbi Yehuda Nasi tells him, ma'ayale legina, he brings him, he doesn't tell him, he brings him up to his gina, kol yoma akarle pugla mimishra kame. Every day he pulled out a radish in front of him. Amar, so what did he understand from here? Shmamina hachi kamarle. This is what he's trying to tell me. At kitocha kaminayu velotit karebu bakulu. Kill them one by one and don't try to get them all at once. That'll never work. Slowly get rid of the ones that are bothering you. The lemele meimar behedya. Why didn't he just say so explicitly? And it's why is he giving them all these images, right? He's showing him and he's, right? So one could give a good answer, which is, he wants to make him think, right? In other words, it's a good way to teach things is by showing, having people think about it and think it through and what the meaning is, etc. But that's not the answer they give. Amar shame chashuve romi umitzarule. He didn't want to say it because he said they're going to hear and they're going to get me in trouble. V'lema lebalachash, why doesn't he say it in secret? Mishum dichtiv ki ofa shamayim yolichet hakol. I believe we saw this in some context. I didn't look it up, but it sounds familiar to me that we came across it at some point recently, but I don't remember. But what is this? It's Pasuk from Kohelet, which says the birds take the information everywhere and basically, you know, just like your story you told me before, Daf, about the birds, right? The birds carry everything. So in other words, there's no way, right, to, even if he did it very quietly, someone would somehow hear and would turn him in. Havaluahu Barta, Deshmei Gira. Okay, Antoninus had a daughter whose name was Gira, Ka'avde Isura. She got involved in some inappropriate promiscuous behavior. Shadrale Gargira. So Antoninus sends a Gargira. Okay, so now it's a remez to her name, which was Gira, but it was also a remez to, again, there's different interpretations, but Nigrar, you're like pulled into something, right? So he was trying to say, my daughter got pulled into some bad stuff, and I'm in trouble now. What should I do? Shadrlev is a very funny story. Kuzbarata. He sends him kuzbara, right, which is coriander. What does he mean? Kos barta, right? Kuzbarta is kos cut off, barta, your daughter, okay? Have her killed, basically, for doing this. And you're a leader, your daughter does something wrong, you have to get up and kill her. Shadrlev, he sends it back a karte, he sends him back a leek. But what's leek in Hebrew? Karte. He says, if I kill her, they're going to cut me off, or my some people say my zera will be cut off because maybe he didn't, Asverus wasn't alive at the time, he'll have no children, or, you know, maybe he's saying, but she's my daughter, Okay? Or he's saying, yes, it's true, I'm a, yeah, and this is a big issue among rulers. Do you, and this is very relevant nowadays, right? Do you cover things up or do you admit them in public? And as Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi first said, you should admit it in public and make a, you know, kill her and show that you're bringing justice. But he says, no, my people don't work that way, right? And if they see that, they're going to basically remove me. And I don't want to lose my power. So shalach lechasa. So he sends him chasa, which obviously is a reference to chas, right? Rachamim. You should have rachamim on her and just let it go. Okay? So interesting that Rebbe changes his, right? And it's maybe because he understands from Antoninus that things are different than he thinks they are. And it's just one interpretation. Kol yom ha'va shadr le dahava pricha b'matrata v'chite apumayu. So every day, Antoninus would send to Rebbe crushed gold b'matrata in a sack, in a leather sack, and he would put chitim apumayu. He would put wheat at the top so that no one would know there was gold underneath. And he'd send him, look like he was sending him a bag of wheat every day. Amar lehu, am tu yochite le Rebbe. So he told his people, go bring the chitim to Rebbe. Amar le Rebbe, lo tzrichna, eat le tuva. So Rebbe says to him, I don't need your gold, I have enough gold. And he knew it was gold, and he said, I have plenty of gold. Rebbe, remember, Rabbi Yehuda was in the sea, and he had money, he was wealthy. He says, I don't need that. Amar le, lehave leman de batrach. You should keep it for the ones who come after you, de yahave le batrai. De atu batrachu, de atu minayu. How do we read this? Leman de batrach, diave le batrai. In other words, bring, these are for the people that come after you, then they'll give to the Romans who come after me. It's a remez that things are going to get much worse between us. Da'atu batrach, uda'ate minayu nifuk alayhu. I guess that means
your
that
your grandchildren will pay my successors with it.
Okay. So your grandchildren will pay my successors with it, but wasn't that the first? I guess, right. In other words, give to your grandchildren to pay mine because they're going to end up paying.
Give to your children who will give it to their children.
I see. That's what it is. Give it to your children who will give to their children and then who will give to their children and they'll end up giving to mine, say, at Saim, who are going to come and ask for stuff. So basically he's...
A little nevuah there.
Right. It's nevuah. It's saying basically things are going to get worse again. You have to, it could be the rabbis are trying to tell you, again, these stories seem to be stressing, and maybe they're trying to tell the Jews it wasn't always like this, you know, and that the Romans weren't always all bad, and they got along very nicely, and they even, right, this is why I think they might be going a little far as to saying that Antoninus got all his advice from Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you know, that's how he made big decisions in life, by always, you know, going to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Whether or not that was true, I don't know, but anyway, that's what it says here. There was a cave. This is the most interesting part, I think. There was a tunnel, basically. Okay, there was a tunnel between the house of Antoninus and the house of Rebbe. So he would always bring with him two avadim to go from through the tunnel. The question is, why he needed these avadim is a good question. But anyway, every day he would bring with him two avadim. Chag kat le'abava de bei Rebbe. One he would kill, and that's what was he worried about? He was worried someone would know about this. So he would kill the first one on the way into Rebbe's house. Chag kat le'abava de beite. The second one would escort him home, and he would kill him on the way into his house. Okay? So far, we thought he was a good guy. At this point, we start to see he's a little bit of a rough and tough guy. Amarle beina daatina lo nishkach gever kamach. He says to Rebbe, whenever I come visit you, make sure there's nobody around. Okay, he was obviously very worried. Yomachad eshkachel Rabbi Chanina bar Chama dava yativ. One day he came, and Rabbi Chanina bar Chama was there. Amar lo aminalach. I'm sorry. He said lo aminalach beina daatina lo nishkach gever kamach. Didn't I tell you? Make sure there's nobody whenever I come. Amarle leitin bar inish. He's not a real person, meaning he's like an angel. Okay, this isn't a human being, this is an angel. Amar le, what's the word here? Lema le lahahu avda. Well, if he's an angel, go tell him, ema le lahu avda degane abava dekaim velete. Go tell him to tell the Eved that's sitting by the doorway to come up inside, right? Because obviously the guy was dead. Okay, so he said, let's see if he's really an angel. So he sends him to go get the guard that he left at the door, which he obviously killed. Also, Rabbi Chanina bar Chama, eshkache dahava katil. He sees the guy's dead. Amar hechi yavid. He says, what am I supposed to do? I ezel ve'emale de katil emeshivin ala kilkalap. I come and say he's dead. You're not supposed to be the bearer of bad news. Eshbake ve'ezel, if I just walk off and like run away, kamazalzalina b'machuta, right? I'll be mazalzal to the machut. So by rachame ale v'achye. Okay, so what did he do? He asked for rachamim and he brought the guy back to life. V'shadre, and he brought him back. Amar yadana zute de'it b'chu m'chaye metim. He says, wow, now I know that even the unimportant people among you can be m'chaye metim. Okay, but he says, despite that, miu be'ina da'atina lo nishkach inish kamach. In other words, yes, you've proven to me, you know, you have superpowers, but make sure, don't come any, you know, that there's nobody here anyway. Kol yom ha'ava m'shamish l'rebi. Okay, again, maybe this is a bit extreme, right, that he was serving Rebbe. Machile, mashkele, okay, he was feeding him, he would give him food to drink. The presumption is that we're talking about when he was already sick. Kiavabai Rebbe lemesak lepuria, when he wanted to get on his bed, we saw this image in another story. Havagachin kame puria, he would bend down on the bed. Do you remember this? And then Amale sak ilave lepuria, right? Walk on my back to get to your bed. Amar lehu, I'm sorry, Amar, Rebbe says, lav orchar lezuzule b'machuta kulehai, right? This is really not respectful for me to climb on your back to get to my bed. Amar, mi simenu matzat tachtecha lo'olam haba. In other words, I'm more than happy to be the mattress underneath you to get me to olam haba. Okay, basically, Antoninus recognizes God. Okay, right, interesting, we're in the middle of Sechet Avodah Zarah, right? We're trying to show here, even Romi, right, that was considered the enemy, but they, right, he wants to get to olam haba. Amar le, so then Antoninus says to him, atina la'ame da'ate, am I going to get to olam haba? Amar le, im, he says yes. Amar le, v'haktiv, and here we get back to the Esav imagery, lo yihye sarid lebeit Esav, but doesn't it say that Beit Esav is never going to, right, there's not going to be any remnant of them, and how can you tell me I'm going to get olam haba? Again, this is assuming, right? This is all about the Esav imagery referring to the Romans. So what does he answer? Bo sema sa Esav. It's only Romans who do like the Masa Esav. And this goes back to the beginning of the Masechet where we talked about, you know, there's it's the same concept of, you know, the Jews and the non-Jews about whether, you know, whether you look at this historically and it's trying to tell us historically, which I don't think the Gemara, you know, that's according to Yisrael Yuval, you know, this is trying to show that historically there were good relations. You know, you can learn that from here, which is true. You can definitely learn it from here. But I think the goal of the Gemara is to show us that there's good people among the non-Jews and that they're not all one category. You know, there's this struggle, as we talked about in the beginning of the Masechet, between do we view all Goyim as, oh, they're all bad, or are there pockets of, you know, good in there, and you have to, you can't treat them all as, oh, they're all bad, you know, and here it's saying, it depends what your, you know, what your actions are like. Tanya Namihachi, here's a braita that says the exact same thing. Lo yasarid lebeit esav, yachol lakol, you might have thought it applies to everybody. Tamud lamar, bo set, Tamud lamar lebeit esav. Okay, it says lo yasarid lebeit esav, meaning bo semas esav. Okay, only those who go in his path. Amarle, right, this is also, by the way, when we talk about, everyone always asks, why does Esav get the bad rap, right? It's not, Esav wasn't all bad, really. And, you know, certainly in the narrative, if you look just at, if you forget the Midrashim and all that, he's like a pretty reasonable guy. But the Midrash makes him out to be a bad guy. And some of the reasons are because they say the Midrash likes to work in black and white. It's easier to highlight, you know, bad, good. But part of the reason is because Esav became this image, and that's, again, once the Christians used Esav as their image, that we're Esav, we had to prove we're not Esav and go against Esav, right, and go at them, and it could be that, and this is, again, his claim, that it's part of the Esav Yaakov, the Christian-Jewish struggle. Okay. Amarle, v'haktiv, Shama Edom Milacheha v'chol nisieha. Okay, so listen to this pasuk. This is a pasuk from Yechezkel. Okay, it says, there is Edom, the Malachim, v'chol nisieha asher nitnu b'gvoratam et chalalei cherev hema at arelim yishkavu v'et yordei bor. Okay, this pasuk basically saying they're going to be wiped out. So Amalei, he says, no, but that still doesn't apply, because remember, Edom is Esav, and right, Esav is Edom, and Edom is Romi. So what does he say? It says, Milacheha v'lo kol Milacheha. It doesn't say all its kings. It just says kings, which means some of the kings, not necessarily all the kings. But then it says kol nesi'eha. They say no, kol nesi'eha velo kol sareha. It's all of its nesi'im, but it doesn't say all of its officers. So in other words, this pasuk doesn't include all of them. And again, Tanya, right? And as again, just like we had before, it was a discussion between Antoninus and Rebbe, and now we bring a braita to support Rebbe's answer. Tanya namihachi melacha velo kol melacha nesi'eha velo kol sareha. Melacha velo kol melacha prat l'Antoninus ben Asverus. Okay, here's their example. They bring in the braita. They say, who's a king that didn't? That's not going to get destroyed? That's Antoninus ben Asverus. Kol nesi'eha velo kol sareha. Okay, what about this kol nesi'eha and not all of its sarim? Prat l'Ketir bar Shalom. Okay, now we're going to hear about a new character, Ketir bar Shalom. Ketir bar Shalom, my, what's the story? What's the deal with Ketir bar Shalom? Dahava Kesra, dahava Sani Lihu died. There was a Kesara that hated the Jews. Amar luhu l'chashivi de machuta, he says to the most important of his kingdom, Misha ala lo nima veraglo, yikte'ena v'yichayeha, o yinichena v'yitzta'er. He says to his advisors, if you have an ulcer in the
dead
English,
flesh.
Or dead flesh, okay, what should
wart.
You do? Okay, a wart. Should you cut it off? Or should you leave it and suffer with it? Okay, this is obviously a reference to the Jews, right? They're like a sore in my throat, you know, my side. Should I leave them and suffer with them, or should I cut them off? So obviously, what did they say? Amrlo yikte'en avichayeh. Okay, you should cut it off. What I guess the skin. You should rejuvenate your skin. In other words, by cutting it off, you'll rejuvenate your skin.
It'll be healed.
Okay, that's the better word. It'll be healed. Amarlu Ketir bar Shalom. So Ketir bar Shalom gets up, and this is why he was the Zachor Latov, right? He gets up and he supports the Jews. What does he say? Chada dilo yachet lelekulu. Number one, you're not going to ever wipe them all out. Dechtiv ki ka'ar baruchot hashamayim perasti etchem. Okay, I've spread you out like the four directions. Maika amar alima debartom bedale ruchot. They're very strong because I've spread them out all four corners. So then they say, "Hai ki arba ruchot li arba ruchot mubayale." But wait, it doesn't make sense. It says like four corners, not two four corners, right? If it meant that I'm spreading you out in all four corners, meaning you can never wipe them out because they're all over the place, then it would have said li arba ruchot. So what do they say? Ela kashem she'efshar la'olam below ruchot. Right, ki arba ruchot means the four winds that are always in existence, just like the four winds are always in existence. Kach yefshar la'olam b'lo Yisrael. Sorry, the image of them being scattered out to four corners of the earth, actually you could get rid of them because you could just go all around the world. I mean, it might be difficult. You could, in theory, capture them. But ki arba ruchot, they explain, is saying they're like the winds that you can never get rid of. Okay, good for a good windy day like today. So there can't be a world without ruchot, therefore you can't have a world without Yisrael. That was his first claim. Va'od, Karule Malchuta Ketia. And also, they call this Malchuta Ketia. In other words, this is...
Called the ruler of a severed kingdom.
Oh, you'll be called. Thank you. That's what it is. You'll be called the ruler of a severed kingdom because you're severing off the Jews from your kingdom. Okay, this is obviously why his name is called Ketia Bar Shalom, okay, from his claim. Amarle Meimar Shapir Kamart. Okay, so they say to him, wow, you're right. Okay, basically, you're proving your point. Mihu, however, kol dezache lemalka, anyone who beats the king in an argument, shadule lekamunya. Okay, so they say, lekamunya chalila. So they send him to basically be burned, okay, to smoke, how do they translate it? To
buried alive.
What?
Buried
to
alive.
To be buried alive. Okay, they basically send him to be killed. So basically, they've sentenced him to death, even though they've agreed, right? They've accepted his claim. So he, okay, Karavanaktin leva azlim, while they're bringing him to be killed, Amrulei ahu matronita. So a matronita comes and says to him, Vaile le'ofa da azla below michsa. They say, chaval to you that you're going to go without paying your taxes. Right, that's the way they translate, without paying your taxes, without paying your dues. So what does he do? What does he understand from this? Nafala resha de orlata kata. Okay, he basically converts to Judaism while he's going to be killed. He cuts off his orla. Okay, he gives himself a brit milah. Try to imagine such a thing. Okay, and as she's saying, how could you go, right? You're going, you did this good thing, but you still have this orla on you. You've got to get rid of it. Amar, yahavit mikse chalfit v'avart. So they say... No. Right? So he says, I gave my tax and now I can go. Ki kashadule amar. So as they were bringing him out now, and as they're continuing on to the death march, so as they bring him there, he says, Kol nechasai l'Rabbi Akiva v'chaverav. All my nechasim should go to Rabbi Akiva and his friends. Yatsa Rabbi Akiva v'darash. There's a very strange line here, why this comes up and what the meaning. Okay? And he teaches a drasha that we learned before. V'haya la'aron u'lebanav. If you remember, the lechem apanim is for Aaron and his sons. And they say, when you have a sentence like this, and that we learned this, I assume it was in Bava Basra, when we learned about Dina Yerusha, and someone says, I'm giving you to this, to you and your brothers, and let's say he has three brothers, so does that mean he gets a quarter, because it's him and his brothers, or does it mean, I'm giving it to you and your brothers, that means you get half, and your brothers split the other half. So, Rabbi Akiva was Doresh, Vayal Aaron Ulebanav, Mechza La'Aron V'Mechza Lebanav, and that's half goes to Aaron, and the other half goes to his sons. And therefore, he's saying, basically, I get half, which is very strange, right? Why Rabbi Akiva is saying, I get half his nechasim, and then the rest will go to the Jewish people. I don't know what the meaning of this and why this is here, I'll have to admit. Yatzta ba'kov amra, k'tir bar shalom uzman l'chaya olam haba. Okay, so now we're almost at the end. Abako comes down and says, he's getting olam haba. And now it's a very interesting line, which I'll leave you with, and you can think about its possible reasons for this. Bacha Rebbe. Rebbe starts to cry. Why does he cry? V'amar yesh koneh olamo b'sha'a achat, v'yesh koneh olamo b'kama shanim. Okay, he says, right, it sounds like he's saying this just isn't fair. In other words, maybe he's saying, first of all, there's some story of Baba Metzia about him having really struggled, and that maybe, you know, he's saying, I had a hard life, and I had, you know, for me to get to Olam Haba, I spent my entire life struggling for this, and he got it in 1 second. You know, on the other hand, it shows, you know, it's very powerful. You could, Bacha, by the way, could be a happy cry and say, look how amazing this is. He did this one amazing act. First of all, it's an amazing act. He saved the Jewish people from, you know, getting destroyed by the Romans, according to this story, right? So, and he was Koneh Olamo in one, you know, which was not a small act, but it was a moment, let's say. He, you know, it took him 1 minute instead of his whole life, and you know, maybe he was also sad because he was worried he might teach people that, you know, you don't have to do so much. You can just, you know, do one good act and you'll think that you're set. And maybe he was worried about the lessons that people would learn from it. All sorts of ways you could go with this. Anyway, we'll stop here for today. We're going to continue a little bit more tomorrow with Antoninus and Rebbe.
I have a quick question on Antoninus.
Yeah.
Maybe there's someone picked up on it, but they have him quoting Tanakh.
Yes, they have him quoting Tanakh. Well, first of all, it makes sense. I mean, when the Romans, the Christians, right, we're familiar with Tanakh. Right, so first of all, you have to remember that the Romans, okay, this is also important to understand, the Romans originally, when we talk about the Romans, they were pagans. And then in the 3rd century, or the 4th century, you know, Christianity, at least at that point, it was very formalized. So it's true that he might not have, at that point, it was probably more pagan than Christian. But there were there were people quoting Psukim around at that point. Also, I don't think the story was meant. The fact that he's quoting Psukim doesn't mean he knew Psukim. It was just part of the rabbi's way of having a discussion. It's really the rabbis and the Gemara bringing this. It's not. This didn't happen exactly the way the Gemara is explaining it. Right, I assume he was an idol worshiper, and it's unlikely that he was actually quoting Psukim from Tanakh.
But Psukim are quoted all the time. I don't know history, and I don't know historically, but.